need a place to go. And they're winding up online because that's the best return on the investment the advertisers can find. Remember, where people and consumers go, money follows. And people are spending more and more time in the blogosphere. If there's an active, energetic, passionate community spending time on your blog, there's no reason on earth why advertisers wouldn't want to spend a portion or all of their ad revenue there. For example, you're Sally Gardner from upstate New York. You've decided to monetize your passion, which is vegetable gardens. You've left comments and started conversations with thousands. And you've now created and gained enormous traction through the vegetable garden community online because you've been crushing it the way we've been talking about it. You're good. You're really good. People who couldn't tell the difference between a sprig of parsley or cilantro have come to your site to watch the episode where you use a water pistol to defend your last tomato from a hungry squirrel, only to lose the tomato to his partner in crime lurking behind the shadows. Your first instinct when thinking of the ways to bring dollars to your site might be to sign up for something like Google AdSense, which allows you to post Google advertisements related to your topic on your site. I'm not a big fan of these sites because it distracts from your content and makes your page look cheap and cluttered. It also doesn't pay very well. I'm disappointed that so many good bloggers have become dependent on it. There are far more creative ways to create revenue. Here's a better idea. How about classy banner ads, a la the Deck Network, which is decknetwork.net. Check those guys out. Which appear at the top or the bottom of your site. Don't overdo it. Go to google.com. Search your subject matter and check every blog and website to see which companies pay for Google AdSense ads to be posted. Cold call every relevant company that is buying space on Google AdSense. They're already spending money on the web. Why not spend it with you? For more information on this, you can definitely go to GaryVaynerchuk.com and search cold call. Speaking engagements. Next, start taking steps to get you on the lecture circuit. Have you any idea how many gardening conferences and flower shows go on every week in this country? Come up with an original theme or topic, call the show's coordinators, and offer to give a talk for free. What does that get you? The same social equity as if you went out and put fantastic content online. It gives you a chance to A, talk about what you love, B, build cred, street cred that is, and C, do it in front of an interested audience. One of whom might be the coordinator of another conference or gardening show and who, after seeing you talk, might be compelled to pay you to speak at their venue. As for the conference where you just offered up your services for free, it may take 5 or 6 times, but if you're good at what you do, your audience will start expecting you to appear at these events, and the conferences will be eventually compelled to pay you. It might be a while, but you're patient, right? Affiliate programs. You could also consider doing an affiliate program. This is where you put a link on your site that sells other gardening products, for example. Or if someone clicks through and buys it, you get compensation or commission. This can make some sweet cash. Think about it. A 20% commission on a $3,000 prefab garden house is $600. And what do you have to do to earn it? Not a whole lot. A good resource for affiliate marketing programs is Commission Junction, or Share a Sale. Amazon, too, has an extremely popular affiliate program, and there are many others. Just Google search affiliate programs to find them. One of my favorite websites is loaded with affiliates, but manages to do so in a classy way. Please check out uncrate.com, uncrate.com. One way I'd love to see more people create revenue is to create their own affiliate deal with another local business. Sally Gardner can go to a local nursery and hook up a deal where she gets 10% for every click-through and sale that they make on their website. For those of you who worry about this, and it seems like selling out to the mercenary, you shouldn't put up anything on your blog that you don't believe in. Therefore, you're not going to do any affiliates with any company's products that you wouldn't buy yourself. In fact, one way to defuse any criticism for allowing ads or affiliate links on your blog is to include an explanation on your site to why you're supporting any of these particular companies. If you're honest about why you believe in the product and why you've decided to allow selling opportunities on your blog, most people won't be pissed off. Besides, society is getting used to product placement in movies and television, and I expect they'll be seeing a lot more of that in social media. retail. Develop a product to sell, such as a great gardening glove or decorative objects, soaps, mosquito repellent, whatever you love and think you can do better than anyone else, for that matter. Even more fun, sell swag. Create a t-shirt for $5 and sell it for 10. If you've got 10,000 readers or viewers and maybe 1,000 buy it, that's 5 G's. And it's not too bad. Plus, now you've got people wearing or using and displaying your brand. And that's something a blog needs. Getting free marketing and word of mouth is always a good thing. Articles. Hit up online and print magazines and other blogs about contributing articles. If they aren't interested in paying you, offer to reciprocate by mentioning them on your blog. Approach food and nutrition nonprofits about writing for their newsletters. Talk to your local farmers market about contributing to their publication or blog if they don't already have one. Seminars. Invite people to come out and garden with you and give them a chance to ask questions. Your first lessons will go for a relatively low rate. But as word gets around that you're good and that people are seeing results in their gardens after working with you, your rates will go up. Make it an event. Broaden your appeal. Team up with a local chef who's also building a personal brand. Once the gardening portion of the day is done, everyone joins in and cooks a terrific vegetarian lunch. Invite someone from the local food bank to give a talk about how and where people can donate food that they grow in their gardens. Coordinate trips for local schools to come spend their morning with you. Books and TV. It's almost a cliche to remind you that good blogging can lead to book deals. From tackling every recipe in the first volume of Julia Child's Mastering the Art of French Cooking, to a satirical list of stuff white people like, or a collection of photographs of crazy gross food, This Is Why You're Fat, blogs have long been a hot commodity in the publishing world and have proven their potential as bestsellers. Video blogs, too, have led to TV opportunities. Amanda Congdon, who started out as a video blogger for Rocket Boom, has appeared on many TV shows. And for a while, she had a deal with both ABC and HBO. Those, unfortunately, have not worked out, though. Perez Hilton, celebrity blogger, has his own reality show and is always appearing on TV. And Andy Samberg, once a cult internet hit comedy sketch writer, is now a star of Saturday Night Live. Consulting. As your audience grows and your blog starts to get real attention in the form of media coverage, ad revenue, and requests for speaking at functions, expect to start getting requests for tips and advice from other bloggers. At first, you'll want to offer your time for free, but if you're sitting on a heavy knowledge base, you should eventually start to charge for your time. If you come across as a legit and honest person, people will respond favorably, especially since you now have, quote-unquote, lived it, or quote-unquote, made it, or quote-unquote, crushed it. How would this process look if your passion were board games? Pretty cool, actually. One, start a video blog called Board Game TV. Two, send out an email to everyone in your address book in your email and see if you could borrow every board game they have in their attic. Three, review every game. Examine the package, the origins, things you like, things you don't like, the history. Four, post it with an eBay affiliate link to the game you're reviewing. You'll get a commission for every time somebody buys it from that link. Five, do that for several months, making little money. Six, launch Collector Friday, where you talk about a valuable or rare game you don't even own, maybe one that's up for sale. Interview the person that's selling it. Board games can go for $200, $300, $400, $500 on eBay. Seven, knock the hell out of your content for a few months, and it's going to be entirely possible that somebody from the Today Show is going to ask you to come and talk about board games on their program. Eight, suddenly you get a call from Parker Brothers asking if you'll talk at the convention as a spokesperson. It can happen. Heck, it will happen. Advertising Redux. Anyone who is able to build a gardening show with 10,000 viewers is perfectly justified in reaching out to the big boys. All you have to do is buy a stack of gardening magazines and flip through the pages to see all the different people who are advertising. And then just Twitter or Facebook. Hey, at BMW, why are you spending 50 grand on a full page ad in Home and Garden and getting little on your ROI when you could be placing something awesome on mine and my blog? Create some hoopla. There's one thing you can do but it takes a very particular kind of DNA to pull it off. Launch your site, put it out for a few days worth of killer content, pick up the phone and call a big corporate advertising agency and tell them what you've just done. Explain to them how your expertise and passion are going to make you a huge hit. Tell them you're giving them an incredible chance to buy out your show for the next year while you're still unknown. In a year, you'll be able to sell the space for $3,000 an episode. But since you need the money now, you're looking for someone to invest and grow with you. Show support today and you'll repay them with an undying loyalty through the course of your career. Sound outrageous? I'm telling you, this is a play. 10 people listening to this audiobook will pull this off. And when you do, please email me at gary@vaynermedia.com so I can share the story. Guys, as you can see, there's lots of ways to make money on the internet. Lots of ways to monetize. Albeit drips and drabs by siphoning off money from already existing platforms and sources. Some ponds I've mentioned are shallower than others. And some might not give you the kind of return that you dreamed about. Maybe $50 or $300 here and there. But how much is your blog earning you right now? Zero. And you're going to turn away $50? Say it with me again. Anything is better than zero. That doesn't mean you should do anything to earn a buck, but neither should you walk away from the dollars if you don't have any. Too many people think they're big shots when they're doing nothing in the scheme of things. Please, don't drink your own Kool-Aid. It will negatively impact your business decisions. Even if your ambitions are huge, start slow, start small, build gradually, build smart. The money will be there, and more important, so will the opportunities. Chapter 12, Roll With It. You know I like contradiction, so it shouldn't surprise you that one of the most important concepts I want you to keep in mind is dramatically opposed to some of the ideas I've shared with you up till now. I've repeated over and over that in order to build a winning business, you have to go whole hog with your passion. True. I've said that if you don't plan ahead and decide exactly what you want and where you want to see your business end up, you're broken. Still true. But what is also true is that as committed and obsessed to the goal as an entrepreneur needs to be, they also have to be willing to practice what I call reactionary business, which at the heart is about being willing and able to adapt to change. This is where most companies and business people lose the game, by refusing to admit their mistakes or neglecting to look ahead to see what could negatively impact their business. Nothing in life ever goes exactly the way you think it will, and that goes for all the carefully planned entrepreneurial dreams and goals. Reactionary business allows you to make a couple of crucial moves when the landscape changes. Please be ready to adapt. You'd be surprised at how many entrepreneurs aren't good at adjusting to the changing environment, and it's a major reason why so many businesses don't achieve their full potential. I see it all the time. Someone with ambition and talent decides she's going to be the Martha Stewart of kid-friendly sandwiches, and then all of a sudden discovers that somewhere along the line, she reached a core group of beer-drinking dudes who religiously watch her show. Instead of embracing that demo and adapting, she refuses to acknowledge it and keeps making fish-shaped cheese. Maybe she does fine with her blog catering to the kiddie set, but can you imagine how much bigger this ambitious person's business could have been if she had given up a day of the week to prepare sandwiches for the perfect tailgate? A perfect real-life example of a brand that drew an unnecessary line in the sand in regarding to positioning was the champagne known as Cristal. Starting in the late 90s, the upscale champagne was enthusiastically adopted by the hip-hop community. But instead of embracing and leveraging the attention, the managing director indicated in an interview with The Economist that he preferred to distance himself from those people known as rappers and their fans, saying, "We can't forbid people from buying it. I'm sure Dom Perignon and Krug would be delighted to have their business." He had the chance to cultivate a golden opportunity to capture major market share, and instead he killed it. Because smart and influential entertainers like Jay-Z and P. Diddy were rightfully offended by the guy's attitude and organized a very effective boycott against the brand. Put out fires. Now, reactionary business has nothing to do with social media. Everyone in business should practice it even if they're decided to completely ignore social networks. A stupid idea, but one that a lot of established brands are following. Actually, less and less since I wrote this book. On the other hand, all of these social networking platforms turbo boost your ability to be reactionary. not only by enabling you to guide your brand to where it naturally fits or where you discover pockets of interest, but by giving you a lot of power to put out fires. For example, I was seen all over ESPN after the NFL draft booing Mark Sanchez's pick by the New York Jets. It looked like I was hating on the pick and the player, which wasn't true. I didn't know the details of the trade when I saw the team go from the 17th pick to the 5th pick. I assumed that the Jets had given up the whole world to get Sanchez, and that's what was bothering me. Turns out that wasn't the case. The Jets actually made an amazing trade, but I felt bad that everyone, including Sanchez, got to see that and misunderstood my reaction. 5 years ago, I couldn't have fixed this misconception, but thanks to social media, the Monday after the draft, I was able to use my biggest platform, Wine Library TV, to clarify what I thought. A more relevant example can be found in the way Domino's used YouTube to respond to the negative publicity they suffered after two employees shot a video of themselves doing disgusting things with food before serving it to customers. A lot of people pointed to this story as the evidence of the downside to social media because two idiots were able to blast a negative image of a company out to thousands, hundreds of thousands of customers within minutes. But the Domino's brand didn't get hurt. Anyone with a half a brain knows that morons work everywhere, and this could happen at any fast food restaurant. No one wants people messing with their food, and of course, the employees responsible should be punished. But their actions didn't hurt the brand. In fact, I think Domino's helped their brand by showing great reactionary business instincts. I respect how fast they got into the trenches and responded in the same medium as the crime that was committed, with a video from YouTube. Good for CEO Patrick Doyle, who in his address appears to be a pretty traditional corporate guy, gamely, trying to fight fire with fire. Next time, Mr. Doyle, try to look in the camera and lose a script. It would make a huge difference. CEOs and business managers clearly don't need to have power meetings anymore with their PR departments to discuss how to handle a problem like this one. They should know what they want to say and then say it. Successfully dealing with a situation like this is all about speed, honesty, and transparency. I saw this as a great opportunity for Domino's to flip this situation on its head. They and every other fast food restaurant should open up their kitchens to live stream and that anyone can watch it, including while waiting in line for their order of pizza. To me, adapting in this way to the reality that cell phones and flip cams are always going to make their way behind the scenes of any restaurant would be an example of reactionary business. Shape your story. Thanks to social network platforms, your story is going to get told, unfiltered, whether you like it or not. You can no longer control the message, but that's not a bad thing unless you work for a closed-minded PR company. As far as I'm concerned, the biggest hurdle for most corporate brands today is their dependence on PR people. They're terrified of the unfiltered message, but what they should do is encourage it. Every employee of every company should have a Facebook account where they can talk about their work and the company, in addition to whatever else they want. Let people gripe. Let them air their frustrations. Don't wait for exit interviews to find out what your staff really thinks. Tap into the pulse of the company and start making changes right away. Yes, there are websites dedicated to allowing people to air their dirty laundry, but people should be allowed to hang their dirty laundry on their own clothesline. Empowering your employees to communicate is a great thing. If you suppress their urge to talk, you're only weakening your brand from within by limiting the access to information. Really, think of this as communist. When you know what people are saying and thinking about your brand, you can address it. If you see falsehood, you can correct it. If you see praise, you can show your appreciation. If you see confusion, you can inform. Your empowerment doesn't stop with your staff or your customers either. It used to be that you were at the mercy of the media, with no say in how they told your story. If you didn't like the picture that was painted, you were kind of stuck. Now you can fight the media itself with these new tools, your blog, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Now you can do a live press conference on Ustream, whereas 10 years ago, you could try, but it was always a gamble whether anybody would show up with a TV camera or not. Trendspotting. Some entrepreneurs are really into creating the next big thing. Not me, really. I'm about identifying the next big thing and jumping all over it. To me, honing your ability to act on waxing and waning social and culture trends is a major reactionary business move. Some people are born with good trend spotting intuition. My whole life I've been able to see something and just feel that it's going to be big. I felt it for baseball cards, toy collecting, comic books, wine, for the internet itself, video blogging, and I'm sure I'll see the next trend when it comes around the corner. I look everywhere for inspiration. Recently, I noticed that certain kids are using markers to draw tattoos on themselves and create body graffiti. Occasionally, I've used my 45-minute drive to work and wonder, what does it mean that kids are drawing their own tattoos on their own bodies? How do I capitalize on this? Where's the opportunity? Then, while I was on the Thunder Cruise, a cruise with all my fans back in April, we docked in the Bahamas and I noticed a huge line of kids at a tattoo station at Atlantis. If I were in the ink business, I'd want to create an organic, non-toxic, kid-friendly, skin-friendly brand of ink and capture that market for the kids who want to design their own tattoos. The tremendous line at the booth told me that parents are clearly ready for this. I'm not the right guy to invent the product that will fill the market, but if you do it, let me know. Being reactionary means that you're always thinking about the meaning behind a cultural change. Let's say you're at a party and a friend tells you she's canceling cable. You hear that and your radar should go off. Canceling cable? No one would have canceled cable 5 years ago. What's going on? If you haven't figured it out already, I'll tell you why this is important. It means that the day is almost here where there will be no difference between watching TV or watching online video. Cable on demand, Netflix, TiVo, YouTube, Hulu have each pushed the envelope a little further by extending the life of movies and shows and by making network programming schedules irrelevant. But the next phase will be even more dramatic. Eventually Comcast or Time Warner is going to have to announce a new channel that airs online videos. You'll be able to use your remote to search by subject. Now the kid who draws tattoos on his arm will be able to type in body graffiti and find 45 different shows about body art on the internet. He's not only going to consume this content, he's going to create his own TV watching experience, not just swallowing what TV stations have decided to feed him. When this happens, if you happen to be hosting a graffiti video blog that first was reaching just 5,000 people, you're suddenly going to have the potential to reach hundreds of thousands, if not millions. For someone who's practicing reactionary business, someone who's looking ahead and adapting to markets and taking advantage of new opportunities to communicate, that puts a lot of media dollars into play. Thanks to social networking, we now have access to powerful, real-time, streamlined data that can allow us to steer our ships very accurately in response to trends and turn challenges into huge opportunities. But reactionary business isn't limited to business development through social media platforms. Whatever the next business phenomenon turns out to be, your reactionary business skills will be crucial in capitalizing it. Chapter 13. Lucky number 13. My sister was born on 13th, so I've always loved 13. And this is a good one. Legacy is greater than currency. You know, a lot of the other chapters were important, but for life, this is the big one. So please pay attention. It used to be that only people in the public eye had to worry about controlling their message. They used teams of stylists and publicists to shape their image. And even the media acted more as a guardian than a snitch. No one knew about our president's affairs or actors' drug habits or a tycoon's backroom deals. Those days are long gone. Let me just jump out of here real quick. Mickey Mantle was out of his mind. I mean, could you imagine the Mick in this day and age? Nobody would be protecting him. He would have probably been out of baseball in a couple of years. We are now all in the public eye. Swimming around in a clear glass fishbowl of our own making. With every email and video and blog post, tweet and status update, we add to the real-time documentary of our own lives. For the person who thinks of himself or herself as a brand, and remember, everyone needs to start thinking of themselves as a personal brand, the ability to spread your great ideas and share your triumphs is a golden opportunity. The downside to this, of course, is that if you mess up or things go wrong, there's no longer anywhere to hide. The public can be forgiving when it wants to be, but rather than test its generosity, I urge you to start training yourself to think through the consequences of every business decision you make before you actually make it. Perhaps that sounded like obvious advice, but I know for a fact that many people have a hard time thinking long-term. Successful entrepreneurs are like good chess players. They can imagine the various possibilities ahead and how each one will trigger the next move. Too many people, however, can't think past their first move. Worse, some don't care to, like a small number of CEOs who know they'll be gone in 2 or 3 years and just want the stock price to go up no matter what the long-term impact on the company is. They're all about what's good for their business today. That kind of thinking is at the root of a lot of really crap judgment calls, the kind that will sink a personal brand. Achieving 100% happiness is the whole point of living your passion, of course. But to my mind, that happiness is unachievable if you don't recognize that with every decision you make, you're building more than just business. You're building your legacy. For all of us made of ambitious, competitive, hungry DNA, the urge to take our personal brands as far as it will go is second nature. But let me assure you that if you're coming exclusively from a monetizing angle, you're going to lose. How you build your business is so much more important than how much money you will make doing it. Yes, I want to buy the New York Jets. Yes, I intend to crush it. But as I build my brand and make money and work to achieve my goals, I'm always hyper aware that everything I'm doing is being recorded for eternity. It does bother me a little that all the cursing I do in my keynotes is going to become part of my story. Yet, I have to embrace that's part of my DNA, and it's the way I express myself when I give keynotes on stage. I don't know if I'm influenced that much by Richard Pryor, but I think I am. I grew up loving Pryor and listening to all his tapes, and I truly believe that when I hit the stage, I get a little Pryor-esque, and that's what's really going on. I want to be proud of what I do. I want my kids and my grandkids and my great-grandkids to be proud of me. This is why every decision I make is weighed in terms of currency versus legacy. Will this business deal make me money? Yes, good. Will I be proud of how I made that money? Yes. Okay, then let's do it. If the answer was no, I never go there. Legacy always trumps currency. My obsession with legacy should explain to you why I insist on trying to answer every email, tweet, ping, poke, or comment. Back in the early days, I used to reply within a couple of hours. Now the volume of my correspondence has gotten so overwhelming that it may take a few months for me to get back to people, but I guarantee you, I will always try to. If I realize I'm falling behind because I have a brutal schedule or I'm busy, I'll shoot off a short video explaining what's going on and try to respond to everybody as soon as possible. Now, a lot of you are thinking that I'm out of my mind for keeping up with this. In the beginning, many people thought it was cute, but now I think many people think it's insane. After all, I'm on the social network radar. I may be only a triple Z-list celebrity, but it would be fair to say I've done all right by myself and I've secured an interested, loyal audience through my particular brand of perseverance and hard work. Surely some well-meaning friends have suggested people would understand if I had to delegate my correspondence or even started to pick out and choose which people to personally reply to. That's not how it works, not in my world anyway. No matter how big I get, every email, every customer, every friend, every single person with whom you come in contact with deserves the respect and attention. Not because you never know who's going to be a good contact or resource later on, although, by the way, that is a huge reason. But because if someone takes the time to reach out to you, it's your obligation to reciprocate. That said, the truth is my email volume is getting to a point where I fear that I may have to adjust in a totally dramatically different way. But rest assured, I will find a way to remain accessible to my friends and fans for as long as I breathe. Legacy is a mortar of successful, lasting brands. I've known this since my days in retail. There was one year where I found out that a customer in Westchester hadn't received her case of White Zinfandel. It was December 22nd, and there was no way FedEx was going to be able to deliver it to her in time for Christmas. My order department had received the complaint, but because the customer was neither a regular customer nor a particularly large one, they hadn't brought it directly to my attention. By the time I got wind of the problem, there was only one thing left to do. I threw a case of Behringer White Zin in my car and drove 3 hours in the snow to the woman's house. Did I mention she lived in another state? Did I mention that this was by far the busiest time of year? Clearly, my time was more valuable to spend in the store during those 6 hours it took me to execute this. And believe me, there was no serious angle behind what I was doing. The customer was an older lady who lived far away and wasn't going to be a hotbed for big business. But I wanted to prove a point to my customers and, more importantly, to my employees. I was creating culture. Guys, if anything this audiobook delivers to you, it's about culture and DNA. It's never about the individual moment. I lost money on that 6 hours. Lots of it, probably. But I made a point, a point that would allow me to make money over the next several years because the core people in my company had realized how seriously I take customer service, and we are all going to be in the customer service business as word of mouth continues to scale and create a small town feel in our society. Conclusion. The time is now. The message is forever. Today's entrepreneurs are building on top of the foundation that has changed our society forever, something that goes much deeper than Twitter, Tumblr, or YouTube. The greatest paradox surrounding the internet is that as much as it allows us to isolate and limit ourselves only to what we believe is immediately relevant to our specific needs, so does it allow us to connect at an unprecedented level and extend ourselves beyond the farthest horizons. People still underestimate the reach of this thing. The internet is only 14 years old. It's so young, it hasn't had sex yet. Yet, it's already crushing all the biggest communication platforms known to mankind. This thing is not done yet. The internet is as powerful as oxygen, but we have not yet seen its full capabilities. Not by a long shot. It is going to morph and change and reveal all kinds of surprises. You've got to be prepared to evolve and adapt along with it. Riffing off the script, mobile, 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 Foursquare, Gowalla, pay attention to these things. Whatever you do, do not listen to this audiobook and take everything I said word for word. I've offered a blueprint, a step-by-step process of taking advantage of what the internet has to offer you now, which has worked extremely well for me. But in 6 months, the environment will change again. For example, Google Wave, everybody. Google Wave is coming. You better ride that wave. If you see something, a platform, a trend, a social pattern that makes your radar go off, you should absolutely follow it. Don't ever be afraid to put your feet in the water. Whether I've said a word about it or not, always listen to your DNA. It will always lead you in the right direction. If there's a message I want you to take away from this audiobook, is that true success, financial, personal, and professional, lies above all in loving your family, working ridiculously hard, and living your passion. And in telling your story, it's authenticity, hustle, and patience. Care fiercely about the big and small stuff, and value legacy over currency. Social media is an important part of it right now, but it may not always be. The theme of this book, however, will matter no matter what the next business platform will be. Appendix A. Did you forget anything? I thought it would be helpful to have a checklist at the end of this audiobook to help you identify what you need to do in building your personal brand. 1, identify your passion. 2, make sure you can think of at least 50 awesome blog topics to ensure stickiness. 3, answer the following questions. Am I sure my passion is what I think it is? Can I talk about it better than anyone else? Or at least the top 10? 4, name your personal brand. You don't have to refer to it anywhere in your content, but you should have a clear idea of what it is. For example, the No BS Real Estate Agent, the Connoisseur of Cookware, the Cool Guide to Young Adult Books Boys Will Love to Read. 5, buy your username, .com, .tv, if possible, at GoDaddy.com or anywhere else. 6, choose your medium, video, audio, written word. 7, start a WordPress or Tumblr blog, or a 6-apart product, or blogger.com, all are solid. 8, hire a designer. 9, include a Facebook Connect link, call to action buttons, share functions, and a button that invites people to do business with you in a prominent place on your blog. 10, create a Facebook fan page. 11, sign up for Ping FM or TubeMogul and select all the platforms to which you want to distribute your content. Choosing Twitter and Facebook is imperative. The others will be selected according to your needs and preferences. 12, post your content. 13, start creating community by leaving comments on other people's blogs, forums, and replying to comments on your own blog. 14, use Twitter search, search.twitter.com, to find as many people as possible talking about your topic and communicate with them. 15, use blogsearch.google.com to find more blogs that are relevant to your subject matter. 16, join as many active Facebook fan pages and groups relating to your topic. 17, Repeat steps 12 through 16 over and over and over and over and over and over again. 18. Do it again. 19. And again. 20. When you feel your personal brand has gained sufficient attention and stickiness, start reaching out to advertisers and begin monetizing. 21. Enjoy the ride. Seriously, going off script, please enjoy the ride. The process is greater than the results. The process is greater than the things you buy. You don't need 60-inch TV screens. You don't need a boat. You don't need a private jet. What you need to do is be in a place where you wake up and you're happy. You're not living for Friday night because you don't have to work the weekends. You're not fighting to save money for vacations because that's the happiest you are. Appendix B, 5 business ideas I won't get to, and I'm giving them to you. I believe that live streaming is the future, so most of the new businesses I envision build on that platform. Here are a few that I will unfortunately not be able to get around to, even though I want to and I think have tremendous potential. See what you can do with them. Number 1, the big one, the QVC of the internet. It blows my mind that this has not been done yet on a serious level. Ustream.tv and Justin.tv, Livestreaming.com are free platforms that replicate live television. They provide the perfect opportunity for a great salesperson to start an efficient online QVC-type show. Find a terrific host or host it yourself. Mix things up by inviting guests, inventors, entrepreneurs, and authors, and talk about whatever you find interesting or useful or exciting. You don't even need vendor relationships to start this up. Affiliate links at first can be worth selling. Eventually, vendors will be begging for airtime. In addition, you wouldn't need a call center to handle customer service and sales. While you and your host talk about the product, a box would just appear at the bottom, allow them to shop online. Needless to say, you would have an archive and break products into categories so that shoppers could easily find past episodes and shop to their heart's content. A T-blog. What I did for wine with Wine Library TV is wide open for somebody to do with tea. Tea is going to explode in this country as we move away from coffee to something healthier and as we get more Asian and, influx and we're getting all these different vibes from different parts of the world. Tea is huge. I am positive that tea will explode. It's a lot like wine. It's going to take time. But the person that builds a tea blog and becomes the tea personality will have enormous monetizing opportunities. The sports center of the web. Where is the sports center for the internet? I mean, ESPN's a little stale. 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 guys, couple gals, whoever's got the passion for sports, getting together and streaming like ESPN News does all day long is a huge opportunity. All we're doing is social commentating. There's enormous amounts of radio shows around the country that are making tons of money talking sports all day long. You could do that with video as well. You don't need the highlights. And it is a huge, huge market. I am stunned that somebody doesn't own this yet. Online book reviews. This one has my panties in a bunch. Are you an independent bookstore crying about Amazon? You know, just crying about how we can't compete on price? The biggest thing you have is your knowledge. You're not putting out content and you're not working hard enough. If you're an indie bookstore, you can absolutely dominate and never worry about BNN and Amazon again by becoming a voice, a content provider. Just like Wine Library is. That's what I did. I'm not worried about Walmart or Costco. Nobody can beat us because we have real relationships with customers. You can do that as well. Create content, not just a stale monthly newsletter that you've been doing for the last 40 years. You should be reviewing books daily, audio, written, or video daily, and so should your staff. Huge opportunity. Next, let's call it PepsiLandHousePlace.com. What I mean by this is that brands need to create one-off websites where they can have more flexibility, don't have to live under the corporate website, and can do amazing call to actions, giveaways, games, and fun for their consumers. One-off destination websites are very attractive. Guys, I can't even believe it's over. I'm pumped. I hope you enjoyed this. I want to do something special. So anybody who's listened to this, please go to facebook.com/Gary, G-A-R-Y, and leave your thoughts. Give me a little rating. Give me a little thought. Every person, please. I've pumped this out for you. Give me one little favor. Just leave it because I want to come back and friend you and leave a comment there. I want to do all the interaction in Facebook. Just want to keep it to one place, do something different. I hope you took away something from this. The world is changing. The opportunities are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I truly believe that this is one of the great opportunities of all time for brands, personal brands, and our society. We are living through game-changing times. No editor at the New York Times, no producer in Hollywood can tell you if you're good enough. People will build businesses. The money is trickling down. The long tail is longer than you've been promised. But you've got to be patient. You got to be able to afford it. You guys know me. I'm practical. I don't want you quitting jobs. I just want you to tighten up your world. It's like sit-ups. Tighten it up. Pump out content about what you love. Put yourself in play. And you can absolutely achieve something amazing.
This recording of Crush It, Why Now is the Time to Cash In on Your Passion, by Gary Vaynerchuk, was produced by Paul Rubin Productions and read by Gary Vaynerchuk. It was recorded, edited, mixed, and mastered by John Marshall Sound. We hope you've enjoyed this program from Harper Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.